Good morning, everyone. Can I add my welcome to Richard's? It's great to see you this morning, especially if this is your first time to our church. My name's Steve McKenzie. I'm one of the ministers here, and we're going to be looking at that passage which Linda just read for us, so please have it open. If you haven't got it already, you'll find it inside this green handout. Well, when I was at high school, I invited one of my friends to come to youth group. And he said, "Oh, nah, not interested. I don't believe in God." And I said, "Oh, that's okay. You can come along and check it out." And he said, "Oh, look, no thanks. It's not for me." And I said, "Okay." But I asked him, "Why don't you believe in God?" And he said, "Look, my mum has always tried to force me to believe in God. But when I look at her life, I just think she's a hypocrite." And that's what I think about Christians, that they're just hypocrites. And I said, "Oh, what do you think about me?" And he said, "Oh, not sure. I'll let you know sometime. Well, a few years after school, this friend was back in the city, staying right in the city. So we caught up at one of these fancy places at Darling Harbour. We were both in our mid-20s. We'd been burnt by the adult world a couple of times, a bit older and wiser than what we were at school. And we were sitting down having a catch-up and looking at all the people go past, all these fancy restaurants that you can't afford to buy anything in, the Novotel and stuff like that. If you've been there, you know what it's like. And he had this look of disgust on his face. And he said, "This city is a cesspool of sin, and it's going to go to hell." And I said, "Hang on a second, I didn't think you believed in God." And he said, "I don't, but I believe in sin." You only have to live a few years with your eyes open to realize that the world is a messy place. The world's in a mess, and God will judge the world. But we only have to look at the Bible for a few moments, and we realize that God sent Jesus into the world to clean up the mess and to save us, even though we don't deserve it, because Jesus is compassion. What I want us to do now is look at this part of the Bible on the inside of your outlines that was read to us before. So let's have a look at the first bit right at the beginning. If you're not familiar with reading the Bible, the little number 10 is the verse number. So we're going to start at verse 10. "Now he," that's Jesus, "was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And behold, there was a woman who had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself." We don't know much about this woman, but what an awful condition to be in. Especially when you think about the everyday hardships of ancient life. No modern medicine, no painkillers, no running hot water in the house, no wheelchairs. And to have your back bent for 18 years, not able to stand up. Whatever life she had before this just would have been a distant memory. No one would judge her if she was just ticking off the days in her mind until she died. But she's in the synagogue, which is a place where you gather to hear God's word. And Jesus sees this woman and his heart goes out to her. He has compassion on her. Have a look at verse 12. "When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said to her, 'Woman, you are freed from your disability.' And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God." That's what Jesus is like. When he sees people in need, he has compassion on them. And he's able to do something about it. He tells her that she is set free, and he places his hands on her, and immediately she's able to stand up straight, completely healed. Jesus is compassion. But the ruler of the synagogue isn't. Have a look at verse 14. But the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, "There are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day." You might not have heard of the word Sabbath before, but it's a Hebrew word and it means rest. And it was used to refer to the day of rest, where the Jews didn't do any work. They didn't want penalty rates. They just wanted a day off that they all could share together. And the Sabbath day was a day when you took time off work to spend it with your friends and your family and your loved ones, and you would remember God and the great things that He had done. It was invented by God for the good of His people. And we're not machines. We're not meant to work 24/7. And the Sabbath was also there so that people who are less fortunate than us can have a day off as well. And this day that Jesus healed this woman happened to be the Saturday, the Sabbath day. But the ruler of the synagogue was incensed that Jesus healed on the Sabbath. He's a bit of a coward, and he doesn't have the guts to tell Jesus off himself, so he decides to tell everyone else off. "Come on any other of the 6 days of the week. If you want to be healed, come on those days. Don't come and be healed on the day of rest." Now, leaving aside the question of whether what Jesus did was actually work, we need to ask the question of whether the Sabbath command is intended by God to help people or to harm people. I mean, what was the ruler of the synagogue thinking? Was he thinking that this woman has suffered for 18 years, so it doesn't matter if she suffers for another 24 hours, she can just come back tomorrow? Well, Jesus is angry at this hypocrisy. Have a look at verse 15. "Then the Lord answered him, 'You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?'" The synagogue ruler and others who are thinking the same things are hypocrites. They look after their own animals on the Sabbath so they don't get weak and they don't have to suffer, but they're not interested in stopping this woman's suffering on the Sabbath day. You know, I think vegans can get a bad rap. There's always jokes about vegans. My friend had a t-shirt which said, "Meat is murder. Tasty, tasty murder." Or you may have seen this one going around. "Where do you draw the line between pet and food?" Well, here's a few lines you could draw. But if you're a vegan, then I think that should be respected. I've got a friend who's a vegan for health reasons. He was having major problems with his cholesterol, and since he's become a vegan, that's under control. I've got another mate who was telling me that he became a vegan primarily because of animal welfare. Now, he was concerned about the way animals are treated. And while I do eat meat, I love meat, I am concerned that animals are treated humanely and they're kept humanely. And when it comes time to slaughter, I want that to be done as quickly and as painlessly as possible. And if someone has a different opinion, they decide, "No, I'm just not going to eat meat," then I respect that. But every now and then, you meet people who have more respect for animals than they do for human beings. And it's not just fringe people. It's people like politicians, people like academics in our society. I don't know if you've ever heard of Peter Singer. He's an atheist ethicist. He's very well respected. He was honoured with the highest honour that Australia has, the Companion of the Order of Australia. He's been an influential environmentalist. He wrote the Greens Manifesto with Bob Brown. But he's also faced a huge amount of controversy for arguing for infanticide, the killing of babies in some circumstances. Because to Peter Singer, newborns aren't people. This is what he wrote in one of his books, Practical Ethics. The life of a newborn is of less value than the life of a pig, a dog, or a chimpanzee. Isn't that just so wrong? That you would offer more care and protection to an animal than a human being? It's crazy. It's violently immoral. Well, look again at Jesus' words in verse 15. These hypocrites care more about their farm animals than they do about this poor woman who's been suffering for 18 years. They're happy to go out and untie their farm animals and lead them to water on the day off, but they don't want this woman set free from the bonds of evil. Well, when you start calling people hypocrites in public, you're going to be divisive. And Jesus is divisive, and rightfully so in my opinion. And when you see hypocrisy and oppression, there are times where you have to call it out in public. Now, you'll make enemies if you do that, and Jesus certainly made enemies. But there are other people who will recognize that you are right. Have a look at verse 17. Verse 17. As he said these things, his adversaries were put to shame, and all the people rejoiced at the glorious things that were done by him. People not only recognized the strength of Jesus' arguments, they also recognized his power to heal and his power over evil. And we need to ask, who is Jesus? He's not just a compassionate guy, or a miraculous healer, or a great debater, or someone who calls out oppression when they see it. He's the Son of God who came into the world to save sinners, to set people free from the bonds of evil. We don't often think of ourselves as sinners. We've usually got the stereotypes of what a sinner is. It's the bikie gang member, or it's the cashed up kids on the debauched holiday in Thailand, or it's the person keeping the secrets from their spouse. And it's easy to look at those people and other people and think, oh, look, we're not as bad as them. I grew up in Penrith, and when I finished school, I started an engineering course at uni in the city. It used to take an hour and a half to get from Penrith to the city, and for some reason, they put all of our maths tutorials and lectures on at 8 a.m. every day. So I had to get up at 6, which these days seems a bit embarrassing that I'm talking about this, but as a teenager, getting up at 6 was a really hard slog. So you can see where this is going. It was maths as well. I was sleeping through my alarm. I was missing the train and being late for class. And one time I walked in a little bit late and the lecturer just barked at me. So the next day I was running 10 minutes late again. I thought, oh, I'm not going to face that again. I'll just skip the class altogether. And it started getting towards the end of semester and the exams were coming up and my heart was sinking. I was filled with dread. I was definitely going to fail. But I was walking through the uni and I saw Brad skipping lectures to go into the uni bar, like he did almost every single day. And I thought, oh, well, at least I'm not as bad as Brad. And then I saw Lauren, and she had bags under her eyes. She'd been out till 5 a.m. at the parties and the clubs, And she did that every single day. And I thought, yeah, and I'm not as bad as Lauren either. And I started to feel pretty good about myself. You know, I at least made an effort to get to class. I'm going to be okay. I'm not as bad as other people. There are other people who are a lot worse than me. Well, unfortunately, when you get into the exam room, that's not how it works. You either know how to answer the question or you don't. You either pass or you fail. It's no good looking around at the people that might not have even shown up to the exam and thinking, oh, I'm better than them. Well, when it comes to sin, saying that you're not as bad as someone else doesn't help. God's pass mark is 100%. And that's right, because we're not talking about whether you can answer a maths question. We're talking about the things you have done that are wrong, the things that you have done that are evil, the things that you cannot get rid of. And we've all done them. You can discover a liar just by saying, raise your hand if you've never told a lie. Because you know anyone who puts up their hand is lying then and there. God made us and he loves us. And we spend most of our lives living as if he doesn't even exist. Imagine if you did that to your mother. She brings you to life. She gives birth to you. She feeds you. She clothes you. She gives you everything you need for life. But then one day, without even saying a word, without even acknowledging her, you just pack your bags and walk out, never to have anything to do with her again. You don't even care whether she's living or dead. She may as well be dead for all you know. But every Christmas you get a message from her and she tells you how much she still loves you. You don't respond. You never return the call. You just pretend that that message never arrived. She's not part of your life and you're just content with that. People might say to your mother, cut off that worthless child and forget about them. But your mother says, I can't because I love my child. And whenever they come back to me, I will forgive them in an instant. That's what God is like. We don't meet his standards. We're guilty of ignoring him and rejecting him. And just like my friend said, judgment is coming. And that's what we deserve. But because of his compassion, God sent his son Jesus so that the moment we turn to him, he forgives us. On the back of your green handouts is a prayer which I'm going to pray now. And it's a great prayer to pray if you would like to turn back to Jesus and be forgiven. It says, Dear God, thank you that Jesus came into the world to save us. Thank you that Jesus is compassion and that he has showed his compassion to us. I'm sorry that I have ignored Jesus and his compassion for others at various times. Please forgive me and help me trust in Jesus so I can live forever in your perfect kingdom. That's what this prayer says. And if you would like to pray this prayer, then you can do it by just repeating these words silently in your own mind after I read them out. And God will hear you and he will forgive. So I do invite you to pray this silently in your own minds. Let's pray. Dear God, thank you that Jesus came into the world to save us. thank you that Jesus is compassion and he has showed compassion to us. I'm sorry that I have ignored Jesus and his compassion for others at various times. Please forgive me and help me trust in Jesus so I can live forever in your perfect kingdom. Amen. Well, if you've prayed that prayer, then you can be sure that you are forgiven because Jesus is compassion. And you can be sure that you're going to live forever in God's perfect kingdom. I would love to hear from you if you've prayed that prayer. I would also love to hear from you if you have any thoughts about the talk this morning. And inside your handouts, you'll find an envelope and there's a feedback card and a pencil inside this envelope. And just so everyone can, no one has to feel self-conscious doing this, I'll ask you to, for everyone to please take this out and fill this card in. What it asks for is your contact details, the service you're at, so that's 9:30 a.m. Write down your name, your email. When you write down your email, make sure you have neat handwriting because I sometimes get emails wrong. Your phone number. Now, if you don't feel comfortable giving your feedback about the talk, that's okay. Maybe just write down what your favourite food is. So I'm going to write down, my comments, I'm going to fill it out. I'm going to write down that I love reading about Jesus and my favourite food is steak. No offence to vegans. And there's a box at the bottom. You can say, I would like to find out more about Jesus. So fill this out. So it's 9:30 service. My name's Steve McKenzie. Steve at Mitang. They're going in there. Yeah, so please write down your comments and make sure your email and phone number are legible. And you can tick at the bottom, I would like to find out more about Jesus. And if you tick that, one of the ministry team will be in contact with you. So Rich is now coming around with the box and put the pencils and the comment card in the box inside the envelope. We'll use the pencils again over the next few weeks, so it'd be great to get those back.